It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. As always, it's good to have you here. It truly is a wonderful time here at the land that we call Money for Lunch. Just a lot of great things happening. And, you know, one of the things that I'm grateful for at Money for Lunch is that I get to interact and get to know and become friends with very successful people that normally I would never have access to. And also because of you guys interacting with me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, you guys give me show suggestions, ideas, guest suggestions, and that is all, you know, helps make the show even more successful. So I appreciate that very much. And one of my favorite people is on the show, and she is one of those individuals that I normally would not get a chance to associate with, but for here on the show, and that is Mary King, attorney at law. Mary King is known as the IRS problem-solving attorney and best-selling author of the book Protect and Defend. Mary's career as an attorney began in 1993. After graduating from Stetson University College of Law, her career in law has primarily focused on IRS problem solving as well as mortgage foreclosure defense. Mary has been practicing law for over 23 years and enjoys helping clients remove the dark cloud of the IRS. Mary King, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. It's great to be here.
Always good to have you on the show. It's you know, especially this topic is as, what's the word I'm looking for? As sometimes as boring or as uncomfortable as this topic is for some people, or maybe the word I'm looking for is irksome. It's a very important topic. And so I'm always glad that you come on the show and you help people find out about how to remove the dark cloud of the IRS. So it's always good to have you on the show.
Well, thanks. I think it's an important topic, if not one that people don't enjoy.
Absolutely. It is an important topic. And you know what? Especially if you're a business owner, there's so many more ways that you can get jammed up or in trouble with the IRS. And I want to start off our conversation today talking about the National Taxpayer Advocate Program. What is it and why should I care?
Great question. So the National Taxpayer Advocate is a program that it's not really a part of the IRS. They're sort of like a liaison between taxpayers and the IRS. And it's used for people who are having a situation where the IRS is creating a hardship in some way for them. And, you know, even a tax attorney such as myself, at some point when we're not being able to work something out, you know, we sometimes call the taxpayer advocate. And there is what they call the national taxpayer advocate, and that is the person that is in charge of the program. And her name is Nina Olson. And she has written a report, as she does every year, about how the Internal Revenue Service has been handling, you know, filing of returns and taxpayer service and those kind of things. And the report came out this last week. And she says that that the IRS has actually helped many, many people with stopping and reducing identity theft. So that's a good thing. So we'll start with the good, right? but she also says that taxpayers are still having challenges contacting the IRS, getting assistance, and so forth. And one of the reasons is because the funding to the IRS has been cut by approximately 20%. Since 2010.
Well, you know, and that to me makes total sense because our politicians really don't want the IRS in their business. And what's the easiest way to do that? Just cut their funding. No, I'm just kidding. It's
one of the other things that she said, too, is that even though, you know, in some ways, like I said, the IRS is getting better, they are also in some ways making it even more difficult to contact them. And that is because at the many of the taxpayer assistance service centers, and all of them in Florida for sure, are now requiring appointments. So people used to be able to just, you know, pull up to the IRS, walk in, wait in a long line, and then speak to somebody. And what has happened now is that you have to call an 800 number or an 877 number or something, and you have to get an appointment by phone, and then you go to the service center at your time, and you usually wait, and then you finally get to talk to somebody.
But you know what? I guess, look, in a lot of ways, I don't mind doing that, as opposed to you pull up and maybe you're lucky and there's nobody ahead of you, or, you know, at least with an appointment, there's a chance that you're going to be seen within the hour.
You're correct. The problem is, though, let's say that you have a urgent situation and you need to talk to someone at the IRS, but you can't get an appointment for 3 weeks.
Oh. Yeah. That could be an issue.
Right.
Yeah, so what do you do in a case like that? You're just screwed?
Well, you know, you can try to call in on the IRS's phone lines, but the interesting thing about that is when you call in, and this is going back to the Taxpayer Advocate Report, about 2.7 million people called in over the past year, and the IRS only answered 40% of those calls. And wait times to speak to someone went from 11 minutes to 47 minutes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So they answer less than half their calls, and you're roughly waiting an hour.
Correct.
Wow.
So people, you know, who work, which is, you know, most people, you know, they can either try to take their lunch hour if they need to call the IRS, and they may or may not be successful, or they have to call before work if they can, or after work. So it is a problem.
Yeah. You know what? And I think adding to that problem, and again, the IRS is doing what their limited resources are able to do. I know that they have some things that you can do online, but I've not met anybody yet that has been successful. Like, for instance, you can get a transcript online. I've not met anybody who's been successful getting a transcript online. It seems like it still works better if you fax in a request.
Well, and it's interesting that you should say that, because the IRS is actually working on a redesigned website that is supposed to be more user-friendly, and that is supposed to be coming out very shortly. And they said that it's going to be better for people who use tablets or mobile devices and smartphones and so forth, so that it's better, you know, for the IRS, for the people who are going to the IRS's website. They can get more information, you know, easier.
That's interesting. I guess I could see that making sense. We have more and more mobile devices, so maybe the IRS is, anticipating that. That could be, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Interesting. I find that very interesting. But it's good. Again, you know, this is such a, to me, the IRS is such a weird situation in the sense that these guys are in charge of collecting revenue, and you think that they would be able to use some of that money to have the very best systems available, to have just a great working website. But again, it all comes down to their funding, and if they don't get the funding they need, they don't get anything.
Well, keep in mind, they're also running computer systems using COBOL as a computer language.
Mm.
And I mean, that was old when I was in college.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So anything else new about the IRS website besides that they're going to try to make it a little bit more mobile friendly?
Well, they're also going to set up a separate area for tax professionals like myself, so that we can also get information, you know, easier and quicker, because we don't exactly have a way to go in and get. I mean, we do, but it's complicated and cumbersome, and so we can get information. But they are saying that they're going to have a way for us to go in, you know, easier and so forth. But, you know, we'll see.
I like the way. We'll see. Okay. All right. Sure. All right. So let's talk about, the federal, the criminal cases. What are the latest, greatest federal criminal court cases regarding the IRS? Anything that really caught your attention?
Well, I think what really caught my attention was that there were so many of them. But the other thing is that I know, but they involved, you know, fraud or false, you know, tax returns and so forth. But they also not only, you know, getting inflated refunds for clients, but also, you know, taking the money themselves, obviously.
Right.
And what people need to understand is these kind of schemes and so forth. You know, for instance, this one case, this lady operated a business that was based on creating false tax returns, which generated inflated refunds for her clients. And the idea was that, you know, she was going to get repeat clients because they were getting such great refunds. So, and what they were, right? what they were doing is they were claiming false education-related expenses, excessively high amounts of charitable contributions. And what to me was also interesting was the clients weren't saying, oh, no, that isn't correct. They were just going along with it. So she faces a maximum of 8 years in prison for this.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what? And it goes to show you, you deal with with humans, and I could just see somebody saying, well, she's the tax professional, so whatever she says is good with me. It's not my fault. She's the one, you know what I'm saying? I could just completely see somebody not taking responsibility for this, I don't know, what do you call it, this conspiracy type behavior, right? It's not my, you know, it's her fault, right? And I bet you the IRS didn't lock up, is probably not locking up or prosecuting any of the taxpayers. They're just going after the preparer because she instigated it.
Right. But I will say this. The IRS does take a very harsh stance on, for instance, if you say that you get caught in an audit or something and you say, oh, well, I relied on my tax preparer, right. The IRS will say, well, no, you have the responsibility to review the return. So even if the clients weren't prosecuted themselves in a different type of situation, you know, like an audit or something, the IRS is going to take a real hard stance on that.
Sure. And I could see that. I mean, I had to hit the cough button there, so I apologize. But, you know, if you go to if you have spent any time on the IRS 800 number and they put you on hold, one of my favorite disclaimers that they make is, you know, any information that an IRS person gives you may not be reliable. So, I mean, bottom line is the IRS, I think, expects almost too much from the citizens. It's one thing if we're talking about somebody who's committing fraud. I'm not talking about that. Obviously, that is on the taxpayer for committing fraud. But there's so many ways, you know, the IRS who has trained personnel, if the trained personnel are deemed unreliable, you know, I think it, to me, it's just ridiculous for the IRS to expect its taxpayers to know more than their agents, but that's exactly what they expect.
Well, and that's true. And most of the people that come in to have their taxes prepared, they'll say, well, you know, we're coming to you guys to do it because we don't understand, or we've had a previous issue and we prepared our taxes ourselves and they were wrong. You had spoken about payroll businesses and payroll taxes. I have one more case that is sort of interesting.
Sure.
This person owns a business. He failed to pay nearly $1 million in payroll taxes. Now, I'm sure you know that the IRS takes that really seriously. So.
Yes, they do.
So he only got 5 years in prison though for this, which.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Totally worth it. totally worth it. Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I. You know, if you have enough employees where you owe the IRS $1 million. You got to do something. I mean, come on, trim down the staff or do something. That's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things where you'd love to talk to these people and say, okay, at what point were you thinking, you know, what were you thinking at this point right here? When you crossed the $100,000 threshold, and you knew that you owed the IRS over $100,000. What were you thinking? And then, you know, what happened here at the $500,000 mark? And when you got to $1 million, did you really think, you know, I'd just love to.
And what made you think it was a good idea?
Oh, man, that is just unbelievable. You know, interestingly enough, last time you were on the show, I played an audio of this IRS scam that's going around where you have these people from India going, you know, pretending that they are from the IRS. And apparently it's gotten now to be such a thing. It just this week alone, there's been two people who posted videos of them with the same people, you know, pretending to be the IRS, and they posted these videos, and one of them's got over 1 million views, the other one's got over, you know, 20 or 30,000 views. But it, you know, it's gotten to become a big thing. I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of people are being contacted by this scam.
Well, and you're absolutely correct. And the problem is that people aren't getting the word that it is a scam.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's one thing. What do you call it? If you are, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, I mean, look, if somebody calls you up and says, you know, with a professional demeanor, that's one thing. But the way these people contact you is just hilarious. You know, from the get-go, it's not true. But I guess it's a numbers game. If they contact 100,000 people, they only need 3 or 4 or 5% to make it work.
Absolutely.
That is just – anyway, that's just insane. But all right, so let's talk about something. What is this thing about Norway? Talk to me, what's happening with Norway and taxes here? Do you really want to pay more taxes? Move to Norway. Talk about this.
Well, in June, because taxes had gotten cut by the government in Norway, the government decided that what they were going to do, and it had to do with their economy and stuff, is why the tax revenues had gone down. So the Norway government thought, well, let's do this. Let's just allow people to make voluntary contributions. So, as you might guess, people weren't really looking forward to doing that. They were already contributing. Actually, their top income tax rate is almost 47%.
Wow.
Yes. So they said they brought out this initiative that if you think that, you know, you're not paying enough taxes, you know, please feel free. And so based on this initiative, they've gotten 1,325 what is U.S. dollars.
An extra $1,000.
Yep.
Well,
but
you know,
if you want to pay more in taxes, you know, feel free.
You know, $1,000 is $1,000. Now the question I want to know, is that from one payer there in Norway, or is that from like a, you know, from 1,000 different payers in Norway?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because is there going to be one person who says, well, I can afford an extra $1,000, or is there going to be a bunch of people that said, here, let's give a dollar, you know, and if everybody gives a dollar.
That's what I'm thinking. Everybody, you know, hey, let's all pitch in a buck. Let's help out our, you know, or you know, let's help out our government officials spend more money. Let's send them money. Yeah, that's funny. But you know what? At the same time, that's very analogous to there's the IRS. I forgot what it's called. I always call it the guilty conscience department, right? So there's that department of the IRS that if you feel that you've underpaid the IRS or that you've kind of defrauded the IRS and you want to make restitution, you can send them money kind of quietly, anonymously. And which I always thought was kind of weird, because if I'm going to send money to the IRS, I'm definitely going to let them know, you know, that I sent it and why I'm sending it. But apparently there's a lot of people out there who underpay the IRS. They feel bad about it, and so they send this money in anonymously, which I just thought it was the funniest thing.
That is very strange, because like you said, you know, if you think you underpaid and at some point you're going to get caught, why wouldn't you want to have that money credited to your account?
Yeah, I mean, because I don't know what their thinking is. I guess they're saying, hey, so I guess they're waiting for the IRS to say, hey, you know, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, you underpaid your taxes. And then they're going to say, no, we paid it anonymously. Here's the money order. I mean, I don't see what the strategy is. I just...
Well, and that was my question: is how do you send money anonymously? If you send a check, it has your name on it. Usually money orders have your name on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the day, you could go to places and you could get a money order with no name on it. You know, like under $500 or something like that. And now there's a story that somebody sent the IRS cash. It's like, you know, it's one thing to trust the government. It's another thing to trust them with cash.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, the person who opens that envelope would say, gee, here's some cash.
Here's some cash. It's got no name. No, you know, it is completely up to the high moral standard of that individual saying, this is a bunch of cash and I got to record it. And
exactly.
You know, anyway, so either way, it's a story. I found it. It just makes you want to go, that's just crazy. But it just goes to show you how insane it is working with some of these people and why the government, I think, does what the government does sometimes, because working with the public is just, it's just crazy at times. You just never know what to expect.
That is true.
All right, so... if somebody has questions about their taxes, if they have questions about catching up with their taxes, payroll taxes, they go to taxlawyerflorida.com. Is that right?
That is correct.
Taxlawyerflorida.com, and Mary and her team can answer your questions, point you in the right direction, and let you know if they can help you out. Mary King is the IRS problem-solving attorney. I love that. Unique selling proposition. It tells everybody exactly what you do. It's fantastic. Check out Mary King and her team at taxlawyerflorida.com. Mary King, as always, good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day.
All righty. Good stuff there from Mary King, the IRS problem-solving attorney. And again, you can find her and her team at TaxLawyerFlorida.com, TaxLawyerFlorida.com. And we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Excited about my next guest, one of our regular contributors, Larry Shaliga and Jackie Bashira, back on the show. And it's just a lot of fun to have these guys on the show. We're always talking about not just, personal development, but really a lot of mindset, which, of course, 99% of the battle is the mindset and how we deal with our people, our setbacks, and everything else. Larry Shaliga is the founder and CEO of Results Oriented Coaching and Consulting, an organization providing training, coaching, and consulting services dedicated to helping business executives achieve rapid, ongoing improvements in performance and growth. Jackie Bashira has helped individuals, teams, and groups transform their thinking and behavior for more than 20 years. Jackie is an evidence-based, results-oriented organization development consultant and executive coach specializing in transformational learning, mindset recognition, and development and group dynamics. Larry and Jackie, welcome back.
Thank you, Bert. Glad to be here.
Bert, it's great to be back. Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I want to jump into this because I think this is it's going to be a great topic. This is a great topic for people who own the company and people who work for the company. No matter what side of the coin you're at, personal purpose, I think, is one of those very important elements that really helps you become more fulfilled and more connected. So, Larry, why don't you talk about personal purpose? What does it mean?
Well, Bert, last time we met, we talked about being on purpose or not being on purpose for companies, where a company, you know, that a lot of them just define what their mission statement is, what their vision is, what their values are. But in a lot of cases, what I find is that those are a collection of buzzwords that people think other people want to hear. So if you take that down to the next level, what is it that you are focused on? What is your purpose in life? That's what being on purpose is. You know, personally, just to give you an example, maybe make it a little easier. My purpose is to empower others to achieve the results far beyond their own expectations. Okay, so once I'm settled on that, and that's what I truly believe my purpose is, you know, I'm constantly working on improving myself by reading, studying articles, books, white papers, going to mastermind meetings and workshops, and networking with other experts like yourself and Jackie to increase my knowledge so that I can help others. So that's what it is for me. Being not on purpose would be spending 5 hours in front of the television at night. That does nothing to support my being on purpose. Does that make sense to you?
It does. Jackie, anything you want to add to that?
I think Larry said it really, really well. And I think, like I shared in the last time, I'll oftentimes ask people, you want, and what are you willing to do for that life? And it's so easy to get bogged down into what I call productive avoidance. So, you know, I talk to people and they're like, well, but I am doing work and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. But then you ask, but is it aligned with what you want to achieve over a longer period of time? And it's amazing how many people get stumped on that. And so that idea of living life on purpose, doing even the work that I do, what is the on-purpose work that I'm doing, and what am I doing daily in service of that?
Yeah, no, that is so true, because a lot of us, and this sounds so simplistic, but this is so true. A lot of us fail to achieve because, first of all, we forget to write it down. Some of us do write it down, and then but we forget to look at it on a regular basis, right? We don't have using Larry's example of somebody sitting in front of the TV for 4 or 5 hours a night. You know, it's okay to do that occasionally. You know, maybe it's Thursday is your night to watch 2 or 3 hours of TV or whatever, because it's your favorite shows. Nothing wrong with that. But to do it night after night, where you could, is instead of being on purpose, being on, you know, going after your goals, working towards, you know, maybe writing that book, or maybe it's something, you know, whatever your goals are, that, you know, I've seen so many people literally tell me that the reason they didn't do this or that is because they completely forgot about it. They got distracted. And it sounds unbelievable, but look, we forget birthdays. We forget anniversaries. We forget court dates. We forget, you know, catching a flight. We're human. And so, believe it or not, sometimes we can get so distracted. We can get so caught up in nothing that we forget the really important stuff.
Hey, Burr, can I chime in on something, though, that I think
please.
Might be, you know, so if you think, take the iceberg, you know, so you have what's on top and then the chunk that's in the bottom, right?
Right.
Oftentimes, I have found when people say, well, I forgot or I got distracted, if we peel it away, what oftentimes is really at play is that a tendency to not believe that what you want can actually happen. And so sometimes when the behavior looks like it's not focused or it's distracted, if we peel away what's really going on, oftentimes you have to start with, do you really believe you can have the life you want? Do you believe you can write the book you want? Do you believe you can reach the goal you want to achieve? And so what oftentimes happens is if there isn't a belief that can happen, you start to engage in things that reinforce that belief. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we don't even know what's going on until we start unpacking it a little bit. So I think that's a really important point, is that even though we tell ourselves, well, we forgot or we this, when you dig a little deeper, sometimes it really is the lack of belief that it can happen.
Yes, I totally agree with that, because our belief dictates our actions. Look, if you're absolutely, in fact, I'm going to use the book example on myself. So I have this book, I've been working on it for a year, and I hit a plateau. I really got stuck. I didn't know, I'm just not a writer by trade, right? I've been involved in writing a couple of books, and I've written one book by myself, and it was okay. I mean, it was really more of a transcript. But bottom line is, I really wanted this book to be top notch, and I had hit the wall, and part of that wall that I hit was the self belief that I could make it happen. And so for months, I would open up that book and I'm like dumbfounded. I mean, this is, you know, I could change a few words here, but how do I make this bigger, better? How do I, you know, take this from, I think at one point it was, 25 pages. How do I, you know, 25 pages, not that it won't make a book. It probably just won't make a really good book. But anyway, so how do I take this book to the next level? And after asking that question for several weeks, it dawned on me that I really don't have the skills to take this book to the next level. I have to hire that out. So I went and paid for a ghostwriter who's taken that manuscript, and I think it was 10,000 words, and now it's already ballooned up to 20,000 words in less than a week's worth of time. And so we're going through it, and we're working on it every day. We're working on it, and because I finally, you know, made this decision that no matter what, I was going to finish this book. we went from a book that had stood still for months is now on, you know, should be, it should, it's going to be on track to be completed next week, because we're essentially working on a chapter a day, and that's because I had that aha moment. I don't have the skills to do this, but at the same time, I have the drive, and my goal is to get this book out there. How do I do that without having the skills? I have to hire that out. And sometimes it's that, you know, it's that little simple shift to get you going again. But if you don't believe in it, if you don't believe in it, then you'll give up on that dream. And mm-hmm. so I totally believe that belief is really, as I said earlier, 99% of our battle is the mindset. It's the belief. It's the belief in ourselves. And we've seen this all the time. If there's a will, there's a way. If there's a real belief, then people will figure out a way to get the job done, period. And I was a little bit slow on the take. I probably could have gotten this book done, you know, 9 months ago if I would have had that epiphany a little bit sooner. But I was so stuck, maybe enamored, maybe I felt as though I had to finish the book. It had to be all from me. Then I had, again, it took me 9 months to have that epiphany that, dude, hire somebody to do it. Anyway, belief is so important.
You know, that's an excellent example. And as you were talking, I was thinking about my own experience writing a book. Jackie knows it was about 5 years ago I committed that I was going to write a book and had a great title. And as of just a few months ago, I still had just a great title. And then you and I were in Columbus and we met with Arnold Schwarzenegger and a few other people. And Arnold Schwarzenegger told the story about, you know, when he first got into bodybuilding, for one of his first competitions, he actually went AWOL to attend that competition. Luckily, he won. Unluckily, when he came back, he was arrested and put into solitary confinement. But he found a way to do what he wanted to do. And then the military, he was in the Austrian military at the time, they actually started training him when they found out that he won, which yes. reinforced his goal. But one of the things that he said that really stuck with me was, you know, one of the biggest excuses that people make for not staying on purpose is saying they don't have the time.
Yes.
And he said, and he was the one that brought up that the average American person watches television for 5 to 6 hours a night. So that was number
yes.
one. And I, you know, my response was, I don't watch television. I don't even have a television. And he says, well, maybe you need to get up an hour earlier. Well, I took his advice. I started getting up an hour earlier. I got 46 pages written so far.
Wow.
And that's just in the couple months since we met him. So, yeah, it's the same type of, you know, it's, the similarity was the book because you mentioned it. But it's finding the time, finding the resources, but having the commitment to stay on purpose. And if it's really your purpose, you know, I think Jackie's right on the money when she says, why are you not pursuing it? Is it a mindset issue? And if it's really your purpose, what are your priorities?
Right. Yeah, I mean, and it's so simple. And again, I think that as humans, we tend to overcomplicate things. I mean, look, if your goal and desire is to write a book, if it's truly a burning desire, you'll figure out a way of getting it done. If your goal is to, you know, get into college and maybe you don't have any money, you'll figure out a way of getting it done. How many of us have read or heard a story of somebody starting a business who had no money and no resources, and they started a multi-million-dollar business out of a spare bedroom or out of a garage with no resources? And it is so imperative to have that mindset, that belief, because ultimately that's what you need to get over the obstacles and the lack of resources and the naysayers and all the negativity that we have to deal with.
So can I just disagree with one point that you made though, Bert?
Sure.
I don't think it's necessarily the case that if you want to do it, you will do it. I think with some people and some personalities, that's absolutely true. And some people, whether it's nature or nurture, they're hardwired or they came from an environment where you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you do it. There are other personality types or experiences that you know, in the fight, flight, or freeze, you know, they are in the freeze category. And so they don't really know what to do or how to do what they want to do. So I oftentimes will say, not if you want to do it, you'll figure it out. But what we know from research is that the two elements most critical to success are support and accountability. And if you have support and accountability, you're far more likely to reach your goals than if you don't. So oftentimes if I'm working with someone, if I'm coaching them or if I'm working with a group or a team,
mm-hmm.
I'll have them develop support and accountability partners because I believe it really – it starts with a desire. And if
yes.
you have a desire, then what do you need to do to get to the next step, whatever that next step is? So in your case, you know, it was, okay, getting a ghostwriter and someone – maybe that was a thought partner with you or that could take your ideas and make them out into something else. You know, for Larry, it was talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger and getting the idea, okay, let me get up an hour early. You know, for me, what I needed was to just be able to see that somebody else could believe in me enough that I could start to believe in myself. So I needed someone to believe in me before I could believe in myself. So it was having someone that could really get to know me and help me to take the next step. So I think what I think is really important. So let me do, I just was going to end it with this. What I think is really important is being really honest with yourself about where you're at. And if where you're at is uncertain or where you're at is you don't believe or where you're at is you have an idea, and then you can help to navigate what the next step is. So, Larry, go ahead.
Okay, I want to build on that a little bit, but also give you this maybe a little different twist. I think what I heard all three of us say at one point in time in different words is that you have to have a belief in yourself that you can do it. And for me, it was, I can do this, but, you know, I really don't have time. Well, somebody removed that excuse for me, and I, you know, once I saw that, well, my self-efficacy increased. I can do this. With Bert, it was, well, you know what? I don't have this resource. I think I can do it, but I really don't have this resource, and that's not my strength. But once he got that resource, his self-efficacy changed to, I can do this. And for you, it was finding somebody outside to help fortify your self-efficacy that you can do this. So I think if you really believe that you can do something, you will find a way.
Yes.
But I
do believe that.
Too often, we don't jump into that. Hurt?
Yeah. I mean, look, because I think that I think Jackie is a great example of that. She needed a little bit more encouragement, a little bit more self-belief, and she found that with her, you know, and therefore she took the next steps. And sometimes it is having that additional belief, that encouragement, that somebody, you know, believes in you. Somebody says, hey, you know what, not only do I think you can do it, but I'm going to help you. And there is so many of us out there who get stuck. And sometimes it is a belief issue. On some level, it's either a belief issue or a fear issue, because no matter what we do, whether it's write a book or an article or do a video or get up and speak in front of an audience, you know, whatever it is, we have to deal with the fear versus the belief. And so if your mindset is, you know, I don't know if I can do a good job, but I'm going to do it anyway, I don't care, then chances are you're going to do it because you've kind of diffused the fear a little bit. But if your mindset is, oh, it's got to be really good. If I get up there and I look foolish, people are going to make fun of me. I could be fired. I'm going to look ridiculous. And therefore, you get up there and either, well, they may not do it because of their belief system, the fear, or they're going to get up there and have a horrible time because they're going to be extremely nervous. But bottom line is, it's either fear or belief somewhere in there, back to the mindset. Jackie?
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. And there's a lady out of Stanford named Carol Dweck, who's done a lot of research and writing on a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And a growth mindset really embraces the thought that anything is possible if you put effort into it, that you don't really know what anyone's potential is because potential is a product of effort, where a fixed mindset is someone that believes that their ability, their skills, their intelligence is innate, that there's nothing you can do about it. So they tend to not even put in the effort because it doesn't matter. They can't do it anyway. And what she found in her research, which I think is fabulous, is that our mindset can shift. But first it takes recognizing it, hearing the voice in your head that says, I can't, and changing that to say, you know what, maybe if I take a step toward it. So I heard a quote one time that I loved that said, for every step you take toward what you want, life takes 1,000 more toward you. And so I know that's fabulous, right? And I think about myself when I get nervous or don't know if I can do this. I think it's amazing when I practice, and I was somebody that had to practice believing it could happen. I didn't just have it based on whatever, again, whether it's nature or nurture. So I remember somebody saying, well, what if you practice believing that you could? What would you do differently? And it was amazing how as I started taking different actions, different things, there were different outcomes. And so I started adopting that for myself. Jackie, you should take one step toward it. Life's going to take 1,000 toward you. So just keep moving. And we can really surprise ourselves by what we accomplish. But sometimes it really is unpacking what's really going on. What's the reason I'm not taking a step toward what I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally love that quote. When you take a step forward, the universe takes 1,000 steps towards your direction. And I love that. I think it's it kind of makes me feel all warm and fuzzy.
That's my goal.
You know, in a world that is a constant, never-ending battlefield, if you will, sometimes
struggle,
or challenge.
Yes.
Or, it's nice to know that the universe is also rooting for us, right? So I like it.
Yes. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. You know, going back to the being on purpose, part of not having the time to do things or not thinking that you have the time is looking at the things that you're doing that detract from you being on purpose. We talked about that from a business standpoint last month, but the same thing applies to the individual. What are the things that you are not doing? What are the things that you are doing that detract from your ability to remain on purpose? I think that's important. I think that the self-efficacy, the belief that you can do it, is a major key. I mean, I go back to Arnold Schwarzenegger. He wanted to be the world's best bodybuilder. His father thought that was a foolish quest and forced him into the military. But he still went ahead and did it. Lou Ferrigno, commonly known as the Hulk on the first television show, he also wanted to be a bodybuilder. He had additional problems. He was deaf or had a hearing problem and a speech impediment. But he wanted to be an actor and a bodybuilder. He tells the story that his first set of weights were two buckets with broken concrete and a pipe. I mean, if you want to talk about people not having a supportive environment, there's two of them right there that became, international figures because they believed that they could do it, and they were willing to do whatever it took to get there.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lesson in that for all of us.
And there is, because, what I love about that Lou Ferrigno story is that, again, he didn't have the resources, and some people would have said, hey, I want to be a bodybuilder, but I can't do it because I don't have any weights. And Lou figured a way around that. It wasn't very pretty, it wasn't very glamorous, but he did something versus doing nothing. And that's what a lot of people do. I think a lot of what life is about is being resourceful when you don't have the resources, because there's always something that we can use more of, right? Whether it's money, time, skill. But if you're resourceful with what you have, that to me is an indication of your drive, your motivation, and your ability to be successful.
Agree. And if you want to go back to the books, Bert, one of the easiest books in the world to write would be a book of excuses.
Ooh.
We can all come up with excuses why we can't do something.
Hey, you know what? And going along that theme is not only would it to me that's a great idea, the book of excuses, and not all the pages have to be finished because you know.
Yeah, somebody's going to make millions doing this, right? Somebody's going to take this idea. But, you know, along with that, one of the greatest pieces of advice I was ever given, and this feeds into, Larry, when you said, you know, this idea that, well, there's not time, there's, you know, I'm too busy on this. And this one gentleman a number of years ago said, to me at one point, he said, what's the smallest part you can commit to? Because we have this tendency to, you know, I'm gonna start working out. So I'm going to work out for 2 hours a day and I'm going to, you know, and then you're like, okay, I'm tired even thinking about it. Or
right.
I'm going to organize my office. And then you look at it and go, I don't even know where to start. And so, you know, knowing that the momentum will carry you, if you just commit to the smallest part you can do, I'm going to write one paragraph today. That's it. And then see what happens from there and how it can grow from that, I think is just such an extraordinary piece of advice that I see working all the time with people when they take something small and then the momentum of life builds it. You know, you get excited, so you write another paragraph. You sit for 5 minutes, next thing you know, you're doing 20, 25, an hour. And it becomes organic.
And what you're really doing is you're teaching yourself to succeed, which then again reinforces your belief that you can succeed.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely correct. And you know what? I can attest to that. Many, many, many years ago, I was, about 30 years ago, I hired my first coach. I was about the age of 25. And I remember this because it was so ridiculous. You know, so one of the assignments that she gave me was to shine my shoes, but not to shine my entire shoe, just to shine a little bit of the shoe, right? And then because she was doing exactly that, instead of looking at the entire project and say, oh, that's overwhelming, I can't write a whole book, I can't lose weight, I can't get ready for that competition, I can't write a speech, whatever that big overwhelming project is, don't just do a sentence today. Just do, you know, a quarter of the shoe, just, you know, go to the gym and walk around or, you know, just do a little bit to, you know, get you over the momentum threshold to help build your belief, to get you past the fear a little bit.
I'll share.
Totally agree.
There's a story I'll share really quickly. I don't often share this, but it fits into what we're talking about. So when I was younger, there were, you know, some things that happened, family issues, whatever. And so I was out on my own at a young age. And for a while, there was a span of time I was even homeless, didn't have a place to stay, but I wanted to get through college. And I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I mean, I don't have money. I don't have a place to live. I don't have – and one of the – a lady who was very instrumental in helping me to shift my mindset would say, Jackie, all you have to do is get through today. That's it. All you got to do is get through today. And so, you know, today turned into the next day to the next day. I graduated college, you know, ended up getting a job, doing very well. And really things took off from there. And so – part of the reason this is such a passion for me, and Larry and I've talked about this, is not only do I know a lot about it from an academic and a research standpoint and professionally working with people, but someone who also had to go through my own transformational change, someone who had to really face what looked like obstacles that I didn't know how to get through, and really using these techniques and strategies of, you know, starting small. What's the next thing I have to do? Yeah, I have to, don't have to look at the rest of my life for being a best-selling author or making millions. You know, what's the next thing I have to do to get to wherever I want to go? And it's amazing when you break it into those smaller pieces what you can accomplish by doing that. And I think that's what we're all talking about, these stories of just taking a little step and a little step, and eventually you're so far down the path, further than maybe you thought you would be.
Absolutely.
But I think, again, the key comes back to – go ahead, Bert.
Real quick, there's this a friend of mine taught me this thing, and you know, inch by inch, it's a cinch. Yard by yard, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Larry.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
I love it. I do like that. I got two good quotes this week. That's good. No, I was just going to say that. Yeah, you really have to define. I'll go back to, you really have to define your purpose to make sure that the steps you're taking are in the right direction.
Yes.
Right.
And I'll just stop there.
Yeah. No. And I think
that's where we start.
That's ultimately the lesson, is that, you know, whether you're taking big steps or little steps, they're still steps. And as long as you're taking them in the right direction, you know, you're going to get there. And I think that, you know, whether it's 1,000 steps or the exact amount, I think that the universe does reward you. It, you know, does move closer to you. You know, we've all heard various various definitions of. Part of success is just showing up. And when you show up every day consistently, time over time, things happen. You meet people that by accident, quote, by accident, you get these lucky breaks, and they would not have happened but for the fact that you were taking daily consistent action towards your goal.
Yep. Yep.
Well said.
I always say,
very well said.
That both success and failure leave you clues along the way. So a part of being on purpose is paying attention. Paying attention to what is working and what isn't. You know, when do I have to take a left turn? When do I have to do something a little bit differently? And so, you know, a part of that taking a step is also then noticing what's happening when you take that step to see, am I going in the direction that I want? And do I need to shift a little to get to where I want?
I love it. I love it. We're going to end on that note. Jackie, always good to have you on the show. Larry, my friend, always a blast. And again, if what do you call it? I think today's show, I think it was an excellent show. It's just a lot of great nuggets. Definitely a lot of good quotes. So just had a lot of fun sharing time with you, Larry, and you, Jackie. And if you guys want to find out more about Larry Shaliga and his team, you can go to, I'm looking for your website.
ROCoaching.com.
Thank you.
ROCoaching.com.
There it is. ROCoaching.com. ROCoaching.com. And you can connect with Larry and Jackie. Larry, Jackie, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to next time.
Bert, this was
Thanks,
great.
Bert. Really enjoyed it.
All righty. Good stuff there from
Take
Larry
care, my
Shaliga
friend.
And Jackie Bashira from orcoaching.com. And, you know, it's just, what do you call it, a powerful show today. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. It was just rocoaching.com, not OR. It's RO, results-oriented-coaching.com, rocoaching.com. Thank you. So anyway, so good show, a lot of great information. And this is one for the books. I can't wait to listen to it again. Remember, as always, thank you so much for connecting with me. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez. And as always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.